Well, here I am back at St Pancras International, just about to get on a Eurostar once again, bound for Lille this time, because today it is Paris-Roubaix, Femme, and demain, tomorrow, that's French, it is Paris-Roubaix Homme, and I am getting a ride in the Trinity car in the morning for Paris-Roubaix Espoir with Peter Kenyuk from Never Strays Far. Never Strays Far is proud to be supported by BICMO Cycle Insurance, protecting the world's riders and the places we ride. Head to BICMO.com and use the code NSF24 on their quote page to get 12 months of award-winning BICMO insurance for the price of 11. Terms apply. Yes, indeed. Well, I've made the trip. I've made this very short trip over from London to Lille. It's Saturday. It's the day of the... excuse me, that wasn't ideal timing from that particular motorbike to come past me. I thought it was in quite a quiet spot. It's the day of Women's Paris-Roubaix. I've just planned my itinerary on the train. I'm going to get on a train after lunch and nip across to Sector 8, which is about an hour from the finish of the race. I think it's about 40k to go. So eight cobbled sectors still to go in the women's race. And that's where I'm going to watch it. And then hopefully, once I've seen them go past, I'm going to get into, well, somewhere in front of a television screen so I can watch the winning riders reach the velodrome for the women. As I say, I've arrived in Lille. I've just wandered off, strolled through the city, and actually headed for a landmark in Lille that I've often seen from a distance and never got up close to. It's quite extraordinary. It's the belfry of the mairie, of the town hall of Lille, and it's huge. And it's quite modern. I mean, I say modern. They started to build it 100 years ago in 1924. And I was just reading up about it, actually. So the original... That sound, incidentally, is rather wonderful. It's because I'm at the town hall. It's a lovely Saturday. It's lovely and sunny. There's a wedding that's just spilled out of the town hall registry office, and everybody's gotten their cars now and is just driving away. And all the wedding guests were wearing, that must be some sort of uniform that's been dictated possibly by the bride and groom, wearing white shirts or cream coloured shirts and sort of ochre coloured slacks. And from a distance, I saw them all wearing the same sort of uniform, and I wondered whether they were ASO officials from the Tour de France. Because, of course, well, this is another digression, but let's not forget the Tour de France starts here next year in Lille, which will be quite interesting, actually, because if you think about it, the three consecutive years, this one included, the Tour de France has started in Copenhagen, then Bilbao, and then Florence. And I think that's the first time in its history, hasn't it, that there's been three consecutive, really significant, big city foreign Grand Departs that will have and have generated huge excitement. And when it returns to Lille next year, it'll be returning to France and returning to a city that knows and understands and feels at home with the Tour de France, feels at home with bike racing in general. And I think as a result, it'll be a little bit lower key. But that's not a bad thing necessarily. Some of the kind of really kind of excessive flamboyance attached to the race of recent years will have just receded into the background a bit, and something more approaching a normality will perhaps return next year. It'll be interesting to see. Perhaps one for the connoisseurs, I don't know. And I'm sure we'll see the belfry. But to go back to the original story of the town hall, just reading up about it, the original town hall that had been there for centuries burnt down by accident in 1916 during the First World War. And then after peace came to Flanders and to Northern France, to Europe, it was decided that instead of reconstructing the old town hall in the city centre, a new town hall would be built a little bit out of town in this working class district of Saint-Sauveur. And there was a competition amongst architects in the early 1920s to come up with a design. It was, I think it was Émile Duboisin who won the prize for constructing this art deco, modern Renaissance Flandrian style. And the belfry, which is disproportionately tall for the building, is the biggest belfry in northern France, and it's 104 meters high, made of concrete with brick, finished in brick and very ornate art deco fashioning. And it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And you can climb up it to get a wonderful view of Flanders, and Lille and Flanders beyond, and maybe even a glimpse of the women's race starting in the distance, although that's unlikely. Although not impossible on a clear day like today, I suspect. But I just got here, and they just closed... They closed the queue in front of me, so I was prevented from paying my €6 and getting up the 400 steps to the top of the belfry. So instead, here I am. I think I'll stroll back into town, see what else I can do on my way to finding somewhere to eat for lunch, and then jump on a train out to see the race. Pete sent me a little message.
Here we are then, boys. There's Aaron, look. First section. Yeah.
He's been out with his Trinity team just doing a last day of reconnaissance on the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix. They're competing in Paris-Roubaix under 23 race tomorrow morning before the senior race and after the junior race. What a day of organisation it is for the organisers. What a weekend actually with the women's race today as well. And Pete's been saying, honestly, if the same conditions are out there tomorrow, dry with this strong warm wind from the southwest, they are going to be flying. He's saying that they're just cruising along on this reconnaissance ride, kind of touching at 0.60 kilometers an hour just because of the strength of the wind in their backs. So that's going to make it particularly interesting, isn't it? Especially when they approach this much talked about chicane before the Arenberg, which was, of course, the centre of cycling's attention and sort of outrage and very strong opinions expressed one way or the other, mostly one way actually, before that was completely overshadowed by that horrific crash in the Basque country that took out Jay Vine, took out Jonas Vingegaard, took out, who else was it, Remco out of the race, and who else have I forgotten? Someone significant, I apologise, can't quite remember. But there we go. That's cycling, isn't it? Lurching from one kind of borderline catastrophe to another. As for the chicane, I don't know, really. This is my best guess, it'll be quite safe because I don't know. I think it will. I don't know. I'm not going to express opinion. Let's wait and see. I know one man watching on from where he does business over in China. Will be very interested, and he's managed to hook up an extraordinarily convoluted way of seeing the race, which isn't being broadcast live in China. But he's going to be watching nonetheless. I won't reveal how he's doing it because I'm not entirely sure how legal it is. Jacques Stablinski, the son of Jean Stablinski, the former world champion, and the man who discovered the Arenberg Trench and brought it to the Tour de the Paris-Roubaix organisation, Jacques thinks that his father's cobbled sector and the way it's been borderline neutralised perhaps by the chicane is, as he described it to me in a message he sent me a couple of days ago, une poisson d'avril, an April fool, an April fish, which means surely it's an April's fool. He's not a fan of the chicane, I think we can safely say that. I'm going to withhold judgment until I see how it's raced. Obviously it's not going to be a part of the women's race today because they're not taking on the Arenberg Trench. They skirt around it to the west. So that's it. Podcast up and running. I might try and find a little bit of music here to bridge between this section of the podcast and whatever comes next. Au printemps, et mon cœur et ton cœur sont repeints au vin blanc. Au printemps, les amants vont prier Notre-Dame du bon temps. Printemps, pour une fleur. Okay, it's 2:30. Getting on for 2:30 in the afternoon now, and I'm about to get on another train to head out to it's called Templeuve, which is a little town two stops away from Lille, heading out in a kind of southwesterly direction towards where the women's race is coming from. I'm going to be dumped off there, and then I'm going to have a bit of a yomp to get to the start of Sector 8. It's really warm now. The wind has got up, but the sun's come through, and it's temperatures in the 20s. I stopped off and had a eat as much as you like Chinese buffet in Lille, which I thoroughly enjoyed actually, and was quite proud of myself in that I held off from going up for a fourth time. So just the three complete plates of food for me there on my way through to Lille-Flandre station. By the way, I've passed all sorts of very weary looking people pushing bikes who I think, if I've got my dates right, might have been taking part in the Sportive on the Paris-Roubaix cobbles. If that's the case, well done to them. Chapeau and all that.
pour une fleur, un sourire, un serment pour l'ombre d'un regard en riant. Toutes les filles vous donneront leurs baisers puis tous leurs espoirs.
I'm on my way to the station as well. I just dipped in again to just call in on the cathedral in Lille, which is, well, I don't want to make this all about modern architecture, but this is really modern. It's the Notre-Dame de la Treille Cathedral, which is this austere, granite, grey, Gothic revivalist cathedral built in the late 19th century in a purely sort of Gothic style. And then what's fascinating, it's kind of like, not a welcoming building, I would suggest. And then it's capped off by the late addition of a facade that finishes off the front, that just completely obscures all the old Gothic, oldish Gothic carvings. And it's kind of, well, you have to see it. It's just kind of flattened off the front in this grey granite. But it's offset with this amazing bronze sculptural door that's set into it. The detail of which is extraordinary. I'll post some of the pictures, I think, if I get round to it, on the Never Strays Far, what's it called, socials. And inside, a piece of stained glass, right the way up, with a kind of very modern rose window, which I wanted to go and have another look at, because it's part of a story that I'm sort of vaguely working on in the background, bubbling away on the back burner, which is so far from taking shape that there's no point in even talking about it. Oh, by the way, I had another message from Jacques Stablinski, who's over in China getting ready to watch the women's race. God knows what time of night it is there for him. But he's sent me, he's obviously still chewing over this whole chicane business, and he just sent me a message saying, je propose à l'ASO de tracer une ligne avant 200 mètres de chaque portion pavée pour que les coureurs descendent de vélo et courent avec 150 mètres à pied, puis remontent sur le vélo pour partir 50 mètres avant le pavé. Génial. So if you didn't quite get that with my slightly mangled pronunciation, I'm going to propose to ASO to draw a line 200 metres in front of each section of pavé of cobbles, so that the riders are forced to get off their bike and run for 150 metres before only being allowed to get on to their bikes again 50 metres before the... I think he's being sarcastic. And then he says, génial. But there we go. Right, off to see the women's race, which last time I checked, the following was going on. A couple of non-starters. I had a couple of crashes early on, actually. Nervy-looking crashes, but I don't think anyone's abandoned yet. Just reading. It's literally just happened a minute ago. Ali Jackson has crashed. Caught up in a crash with other riders. They've quickly back on their bikes, but that is not ideal. There is 121 kilometres still to go, and a lone leader has an advantage of 1 minute and 15 seconds. And that lone leader is Victoire Jean-Chiret from the Kamugi Grand Est team. Off on our own. Good luck to her. Right, off to see the race.
Voir tous ces cœurs comme des artichauts qui s'effeuillent en battant pour s'offrir au badaud. Voir tous ces cœurs comme de gentils mégots.
All right, well, I find myself at a bike race, where I've always wanted to be, actually, in amongst it. I've pitched up in Templeuve, which has got it's a tiny little village, really. It's got a little railway station that I've just disembarked at and stomped along for about a kilometre to find. There's two pavé sections in Templeuve, Sector 8 and Sector 8B or something. So there's only a couple of hundred metres of one-star sector, and then a little bit of tarmac, and then you're onto a two-star sector. And that's where all the crazies have assembled. Loads of camper vans from Brittany, from Flanders, from Belgium. There's a big hospitality tent here that's starting to dish out the beers. There's a group of lads, I think, from the Netherlands who have... I think completed the Sportive of the day, and they're getting the beers in, and everyone who cycles past, including a tiny little boy who's genuinely absolutely minute little kid on a gravel bike who's flying, and he's obviously doing circuits off Templeuve, because I've seen him come past about four times, and he's minute, and every time he comes past he gets a bigger and bigger roar from the assembled Dutch drunks. Back in the race, they've hit the cobble sectors now, the women. Oh, I'm being stared at by an Airedale, who's kind of like slobbering at me from the inside of one of these camper vans. He's just noticed what I'm doing. I don't think he's ever seen a podcaster before. It's a bit of dog action here. He's baring his teeth and he's licking the windscreen. I don't know whether that's a friendly gesture or not. I'm just going to step a little bit further away from that dog just in case it all kicks off. Yeah, in the race, they've picked up this tailwind. I tell you what, it's the clouds have rolled in a little bit. Very high altitude clouds. It's got a little bit grey and the wind is stiffening all the time and it is right in their backs and they're flying along. Last time I checked, they've been through two sectors of cobbles. I don't think anyone of any great significance has come to grief yet. Alison Jackson, as we noted, last year's a surprise winner. She's crashed but got back on. She seems to be fine. That early breakaway has been snuffed out and the bunch is just kind of starting to get whittled down now with each successive sector. There's 15 more still to go and seven sectors till they get to me. Well, should only be a matter of maybe about 20 minutes or so until the peloton comes through this sector. Still kind of all together as far as I know, as far as I can tell. I've switched off watching actually. I'm more crowd watching as the beer tent builds up. Very local feel to it here. People have just wandered in from the village or come across the fields on bikes or just driven up to take their normal sort of place by the side of the road. I just had a long chat with a lovely chap whose name I didn't catch, who took the photo that I posted online of me holding up my Never Strays Far flag. And it was great, just a long chat. He's a lovely bloke, a really good amateur in the late 80s, early 90s. Said he raced against Stephen Roach and we talked about riders who he knew quite well and had a long chat about Paul Sherwin, who'd left a big impression on this chap. And Paul, that's not the first time that I've heard that from French riders, actually, about the impression that Paul made. Obviously a very good French speaker, Paul, throughout his career here. It was nice to have that name mentioned here in Paris-Roubaix. But looking forward to it now. It won't be too long until we see the race come through. And it's great. It's very different from the Tour of Flanders. Much more kind of, in a way, less frenetic and more laid back. And it's got more of a kind of local feel to it, actually. And it's no bad thing. I'm enjoying it. Oh, tell you what though, it's all starting to break up now. For the first big moves of the day, Mariana Voss, Lottie Kopecky, Christina Schweinberger and Pfeiffer Georgie, the British national champion, they have got a gap and they are riding away from the rest of the race at the moment with 52.3k to go. The wind is really strong now. Mariana Voss has nearly got blown into the verge, just about held it up, and these four strong riders at the moment on sector 12, three sectors away from where I am now, are riding away from Paris-Roubaix. It's a big, big move now. They've already got 10 seconds and it's going out. Oh, well, it wasn't, in fact, the winning move at all yet, because that group, it was dangling off the front with about 10 or 11 seconds. And then Sister Ellen van Dijk got on the front for a little trek, who'd missed the move. And within seconds, she dragged it all back. Unbelievable bit of riding from Ellen. So it may well be that we'll have a group of about 20 or 30 coming to this sector together. So that little move has gone. Or not gone, I should say. It's gone in the sense that it's not no longer there, if that makes sense. Well, there's 10 kilometres to go in the race. I'm sitting on the station in Templeuve, waiting for a train to Valenciennes, where I'm staying tonight. And I've got intermittent signal on my phone. It keeps cutting in and out, cutting out. It's buffering at the moment, so I don't know what's happening, except to say that the group containing Kopecky and Mariana Voss, as well as Ellen van Dijk and Elisa Balsamo, one other, and Pfeiffer Georgie, who dragged Elisa Balsamo back, is clear, and it looks like they're going to stay clear. And Ellen van Dijk's sister, Ellen, having done all this work for Elisa Balsamo, has been attacking and attacking and attacking, hasn't managed to get clear yet, but in an act of pure bias, the entire back office of the Never Strays Far podcast team, which is me, David's in Japan at the moment, and Pete's in the meeting for the director's meeting for the under 23 Espoir. So I'm the only person actually following this race. The entire back office of Never Strays Far is crossing my fingers for Sister Ellen. And I'm sure somewhere in his kind of mansion, mountaintop mansion in Switzerland or wherever he lives, Cadell Evans, brother Cadell, is also crossing his fingers for Sister Ellen. Come on. 2.5k to go, and they're still all together, those six riders. And my telephone's telling me that there's not enough internet. Well, I'll be the judge of that. All I'm looking at is a frozen picture of all six of them on that long, straight approach road down to the velodrome in Roubaix. So Ellen, Sister Ellen, is going to have to lead out, her team leader now, Elisa Balsamo, and she's going to have to try and out-sprint Mariana Voss, who's on scintillating form, and the world champion Lotte Kopecky. Well, they're on the track now and they're taking the bell. Ellen van Dijk is on the front. I've got pictures, I can see what's happening. So van Dijk and this group of five riders on her wheel, including Amanda Crack as well, she's still there. But van Dijk sits on the front. Her teammate Elisa Balsamo is right at the back. So too is the world champion Lotte Kopecky, Mariana Voss. A couple of wheels in front. Pfeiffer Georgie on the wheel of Ellen van Dijk as they hit the banking on the far side of the track. Drop down now. It's half the length of the track and the sprint is opened up by Pfeiffer Georgie. Balsamo alongside her. Voss through on the blue line. Voss taking the racing line. Kopecky beaten at the moment unless she can find room on the outside. It's Voss just about with her nose in the front. Here comes Kopecky with a late challenge though, and Kopecky gets past Balsamo. Kopecky times it perfectly and the world champion takes the win. Wow. She judged that to perfection. And that was a bit of a slightly self-conscious bike race commentary on an empty platform in northern France.
Hey, Ned, so cool that you were there, actually. A shame I didn't see you, but I was focused on something else. Yeah, to say something for in the podcast, yeah, I mean, it was a special day. I was really happy to feel good. I'm happy to be back in the playing in the final in a race like this because, I always had a little bit mixed feelings about this race. The first year, I crashed so many times that I really, really hated it. And then the second year I did it was really cool and we won with Elisa Longo-Borghini. And then this year, it was nice to be there at the front and to feel strong. But for me, myself, it's hard to make a difference. So I was happy we had Balsamo in a really great position. And I tried to help her as good as possible. But, you know, Kopecky was stronger. So that was it. And in general, it's just very special to race again like this 6 months after the birth, after I gave birth. I said already, giving birth, this race is nothing compared to giving birth. So, you know, everything in perspective. And it was really nice. Our son Faz was watching together with Benjamin. So, I need to give him some entertainment. So I'm happy I could. I don't know if he liked it, but I hope so. Well, hope you're doing well. And nice to be in your podcast again. Good luck. Ciao, ciao.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, what an excellent experience that was. The first World Tour women's race I've ever actually got out and spectated by the side of the road, and it was brilliant. I was doing it all on my own, met some fantastic people, had some really interesting conversations. It was beautiful waiting for the race to come by, and when it came by, it didn't disappoint. Snatching kind of little glimpses of it on my phone all the way to the very end, and the brilliant ending, brilliant performance from Kopecky. Great sprint in the end from Elisa Balsamo for second place, Ellen's teammate, because she looked cooked when she was dropped from that group initially. So hats off to her. And also to the indefatigable performance from Pfeiffer Georgie to get the first British podium in Paris-Roubaix since Maggie Backstead won it. And he's not even British, is he? He's kind of Swedish. In 2004. So incredible performance from Pfeiffer Georgie, especially given how much work she put into bringing Elisa Balsamo back and joining back up with that front group. Incredibly impressive. And I've just let myself into a little apartment in Valenciennes, which is one of those places in the heart of the north of France, hard up against the Belgian border, heart of the mining community, a place that I crisscross and come to time and time again. In fact, it's only been a few weeks since I was here, actually, talking to my friend Jacques Stablinski. It's also, basically, you may remember, if you've read 1923, it intersects very briefly with Théophile Beckmann's career in the 1923 Tour de France, because he crosses, what stage is it? It's the penultimate stage that finishes in Dunkirk in the 1923 Tour de France, and he crosses at the checkpoint in Valenciennes, 307 kilometres into the stage, so twice as far as the women race today. He crosses first into Valenciennes, and I wrote this paragraph. It's possible that some of his family may have made the short trip across into France to see him race. His father Camille, perhaps, with Bertina, who agonised for her son when he raced. He was, after all, their eldest child and only surviving son. Perhaps friends and supporters from Merbeke made the trip to France, just as Bottecchia had enjoyed Italian support across the border. Maybe that was the case, since Beckmann is recorded as having been the first rider at the checkpoint in Valenciennes to sign in, the closest to the race would have come to Belgium. Perhaps he was inspired by the sight, reported in Vélosport, of a sea of black, gold and red flags held aloft as the race route hugged the Belgian border. It was, according to Sportwereld, a beautiful race from Fieleken Beekman. And I won't spoil the rest of what happens that day to him. You'll just have to read the book. All right, Pete.
All right, Ned.
Nervous?
A little bit, are you?
I'm just nervous about the podcasting. I haven't got to make sure that eight riders... How many on your team? Seven riders?
Seven. It's just the nervous energy. You can feel it, can't you?
Yeah.
You can't see it, but it's there. And you just feel, you just absorb it.
Yeah.
And then you can't not feel nervous. It's like an apprehension. You just want to get underway and then it's just back to work there.
You're going to pop around the corner and have a look at the start of the sign-on podium. You're going to see that? It's quite good.
Is it?
Yeah. Daniel Monjas is introducing the riders.
Oh, yeah?
The legend, the old speaker of the Tour de France. As soon as he went around the corner, I recognise that voice.
Did he retire not long ago?
Yeah, a few years ago. But he turns out, he'll do it like...
I know who it is.
What a moment for the riders, being introduced by Daniel Monjas.
And they won't even have a clue.
No.
We're having the foggiest idea.
Yeah. So... Yeah,
it's got a good feel to it, hasn't it? A
little bit of context. It's the beginning of the under-23 race today. It's Sunday morning, day after the women's race. That's the sound of air being let out of a rear wheel that Aaron's doing. He's got about 100 wheels to sort out.
Remember when people's hair used to look like that back in the day?
Peter's now pointing at a wind muffler. Rather an extravagant one.
I'm on your bed,
actually, my hair's heading in that direction at the moment.
As well with that. A fancy wind muffler.
Well, it's a window.
Yeah,
window.
Yeah,
what is the wind doing today?
Cross tailwind, very strong.
Like wet, potentially?
Mid-20s. I don't know. Maybe some isolated showers, but...
Yeah, that's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
So, who have you got on the team? Run us through the names.
Well, they're right in front of us, aren't they? We've got Bob Donaldson, who is the leader for today, who we're working for. Callum Fornley, the strong Scotsman. We've got Dean Harvey, the Irishman. Tobias Nacken, Norwegian warrior. Bob Charlton. Time trialist of doom. Obviously, Joe Pidcock, younger brother of Tom, who's also racing today.
Won a race in Ireland, didn't he, last week?
Yeah, so, he did. Yeah, so did Dean as well.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing one person.
But
Will Smith, how could I forget Will Smith? Yeah.
But plan A, because you've got to have a few up your sleeve for Roubaix, haven't you, is Bob.
Plan A is Bob, yeah. I mean, it's different to the pro race in terms of, you see... Obviously, there's a massive fight in the pro race to get to the first sector. But once they hit it, the teams often just, they relax then. They are where they are. They get through the first couple of sectors. They know where the racing's going to happen. Our race, it's just the first 30 kilometres to the first sector. It's just going to be absolutely chaos. And that's the finish line, basically.
Right.
You know, and it's not a case of hitting the first sector and riding it in a controlled manner. They'll just go full gas over it. Race will split to bits. You know, it may come back together a little bit.
Yeah.
Depending on what happens. But for us, it's a, and I can't stress it enough to the guys who are doing that important job of getting Bob and Callum into that sector in the front, it's essentially a 30k race. It's the way I see it.
The thing is, there's no other way. Am I right in thinking there's no other way of doing it? Because no. if you're not there and doing that, you're out of the race. The gross is gone.
You're out of the race. And even if...
Hey, Joe, you're right.
You're right, Joe. Yeah, you just can't afford to be anywhere other than the front. So it's complicated, but simple in many ways. It's easier said than done, let's put it that way.
Right then, I'm going to go and watch him sign on, I think.
Trinity Racing, dirigé par le champion olympique et champion du monde, Peter Kenog. L'équipe est composée notamment de Robert Donaldson, quatrième au Tour de Renoir. Il a gagné à l'Orlène Nation. Dans l'équipe, nous avons également Callum Tordley, qui a brillé au championnat du monde.
So Axel Merckx is here, as he always is with his Hagens Bearman team. What's the plan today, Axel?
The plan is, first of all, try to stay as safe as possible. You know, obviously it rained hard overnight, so the cobblestones are going to be pretty slippery and greasy. But I mean, you know, it's Roubaix, it's 2:23 Roubaix. I mean, anything can change in the blink of an eye. To me, what's the most important is try to get the team as compact as possible and to put them in the right position, especially the first cobblestone section. But I think that's the same with everybody.
Sure.
And then after, I think the legs are going to make the difference.
What's the difference between the Espoir, the under 23 race, the way it's raced, and the elite race?
I don't know if there's a lot of difference, because when you look at the World Tour races right now, they just start full gas also.
Yeah.
Now there's no I hate to say it, but back in the days it was like always maybe a little bit more of an easier start and a slower start, but now it's from the get go. and it's the same with the Espoirs, it's the same with the juniors, it's the same with every category. So I think in that vision, there's not a lot of change.
Yeah, and how many years now have you been running this team? It's been a long shift already, hasn't it? Yeah,
like, I think I stopped counting, but I think it's a 16th season now. So seriously, it's been a while.
How much has the under 23 scene kind of developed, changed? Is it better than when you sort of got involved in the beginning?
Well, I mean, if you look around the parking lot, when I started, you only had cars and vans. And stools on the side of the road.
Amazing.
And now you have teams that show up with buses and trucks and all that stuff.
Well, this could be a pro race, really.
It could be a pro race. I think there's some pro teams that don't even have the equipment and the support that some of the development teams have. But I think you have to put everything in perspective, and I think you have to stay a U23 program. But the category, I think, has changed so much that I think the junior category is now becoming the Espoir category. And then we are becoming really... Yeah. Closer to a pro team than we were before.
Well, if you have a 21-year-old winning the Tour de France, everything's changed, doesn't it? In the world of cycling.
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, you have, you know, like, I mean, you have 20-year-olds that are competitive in World Tour Classics and finish top 5, top 10, or even winning some. You know, then it changed the perspective, I think. But it's not for everyone, but everything is evolving. I think the juniors are well more prepared than they were like 10, 15 years ago. But at the same time, you know, there's a certain level of maturity and pressure that some riders can or cannot handle, and that's the biggest danger, I think, when you try to have some young riders move up really fast.
Okay, and last question: who are you riding for today? What's the plan?
We never ride for anybody. We're here as a team, and everybody with all 7 of us, we have equal chances. Of course, we have got some guys that have more experience and some guys that are just really fresh, and you know, we know more or less who's, you know, who has more in house maybe to do a great result. But I hate to start a race, a 1 day race with one leader. It's one team. We win together, we lose together.
Good luck, and good luck behind the wheel of the car as well. It's a big day for DS's today, isn't
it? But that's actually the fun part.
Well, riders continuing just to buzz around the car park where everyone's waiting for the race to get underway. I think most of the teams are signed on now, and one observation I will make is that amongst the under 23 generation of riders, the mullet has seized control of the peloton effectively. There's barely a rider who hasn't got some sort of variation of a mullet. Visma Lisebike in particular seemed to have a kind of a uniform mullet look that looks dominant, I'll be honest, in terms of this particular peloton. But every team has got has dipped their toe in the mullety waters, let's put it that way. Right, well, I've parked myself down here just for a second or two at the Lotto Destiny boys, and I've just bumped into a man I've never met before, Josh Giddings. Hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah, hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you indeed. So, go on, give us your thoughts ahead of this one.
Yeah, today's going to be actually an interesting one. I've never done Roubaix in dry weather. I did the junior one in the wet, and also the U23 last year in the wet, so...
What's your record like in those two races?
I was 12th in the juniors, yep. I think 2021, and then I was 17th last year.
Very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Decent record.
From group, I think. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think today the main thing in the beginning is not to panic if something goes wrong.
Yep.
Almost expect everything.
Yeah.
Punctures, maybe a crash.
Yeah.
And be in front for the sectors, try and stay out of trouble, and I think the race will play out, you know, so... Not much of a plan, but just being attentive from the start.
You can only plan so much with Roubaix, can't you? Exactly. You've just got to be... And how much of it is a mental thing, like thinking on your feet, knowing which moves to follow, which moves matter, and you know that. And how much would the experience of having raced it a couple of times as a junior and under 23 help?
Yeah, I think definitely massive, because you know you kind of have a good expectation of what it's like on the cobbles. I think when it's wet, my previous races... at Roubaix have been wet, so it's been quite chaotic.
Yeah.
I imagine it'll still be the same in the dry, just a lot faster. So yeah, the main thing is just being aware and being in front. Position's key, going to be key today. So
all right, mate, I'll look out for you on the road. Well done. Cheers. Good luck, Josh.
Cheers.
We need to be really fucking quick and on it with the situation, so it's a quick yes or no.
The decision has to be made before we get there,
whether it's a wheel
or a bike, a crash.
And we really care about your well-being, but if the ambulance is there, it's not about us just fucking off and leaving you and not caring. It's about that we need to get back to whoever's in the race.
Think of your teammates.
Okay,
yeah.
So you got, and if the ambulance is there, don't worry, they'll look after you. And then I know a lot of you said you won't need waters, but trust me, if it's dusty, your mouth's going to be dry, you're going to be absolutely gagging for a bottle of water after 100k.
Off we go then. We are pulling away from our stationary position, and we've driven about 20 yards. We're coming to a halt now in the convoy of cars. What car number are we?
Eight.
Happy with that? Could be worse.
I think you got to be happy with eight, don't you? When it got to seven and I still wasn't getting called, I was like, oh, it's one of them. Maybe car. Yeah. And then it was like Trinity. I was like, you know what?
I'll take that.
Take that.
Here we go. Passing through the start line. We have a little goodbye to Daniel Monjas, the legend. There he is, beavering away. Some folk in traditional costume. Quite a decent crowd as well. And off we go. Out we go. Exciting. Looking forward to this.
Well, it's the morning of Paris-Roubaix. And I'm staying at what you could call a basic French hotel. And in all honesty, the breakfast doesn't offer up much in the way of nutrition. Thankfully, I can rely on my daily dose of AG1. And with being on the road so much, the travel packs have been an absolute game changer. AG1 is a vitamin and mineral probiotic drink that's designed to meet the foundations of all your vitamin and mineral needs. Of course, when I'm at home, I always try and get my vitamin and mineral servings through whole foods, like freshly prepared fruit and veg. But taking AG1 and just being able to throw a few of those travel packs in the bag before I fly off to races puts my mind at ease, knowing at least I'm starting the day right. And did I mention it also contains adaptogens to help buffer stress? I always feel better after taking AG1. I have more focus, more energy, and it tastes great too. That's why if anyone ever asks me if I could only take one supplement, what would it be? I will always answer AG1. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. That's drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. Check it out.
What a calm start to the race, just saying. Something like 15, 12, 13, 14 kilometres into the race, something like that. There's a group of four riders up the road, 1:40 last time I heard, although...
Come down a bit, I think.
Has it?
Not
not sure what to. But yeah, but yeah.
Yeah.
Calmest start to any race I've ever worked on.
Which is a bit weird. But yeah. But the suspicion
it's a bit
is
unnerving, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's like those war movies where they say it's calm tonight. Almost too calm.
Exactly like that, yeah.
Peaks and troughs.
Peaks and troughs. Yeah. All is calm. A little bit of a crash. There's a descent. Fizz my Lisa bike down. One of the Trinity guys. So Aaron's jumped out. Spare wheels. Can't see who it is. Who is it?
Can't see.
Bike change. Bike's coming off the roof. Aaron's got it. There's quite a few riders gone down here, actually. Okay, Sam Sigler lost one. Nantes at L'Antique. He's back.
Whoa.
Up and running. Josh Charlton. And that was roughly the point at which I gave up trying to tell a cogent story of what was happening at all. For the next 3 hours, all I knew was total confusion, absolute awe, and a not very healthy dose of terror. The cobbles were one thing, the destruction of the shape of the race quite another, with stuff happening all the time and everywhere on single track farm roads you'd hesitate to drive a tractor down. The only way to get closer to the front of the race was to drive like a genuine berserker on the tarmac sections, through villages, dodging central reservations, all of you in cars, all of the time. I knew that Paris-Roubaix was insane, but neither I, Aaron, or Pete, all experiencing the race for the first time, knew it was that insane.
Come on! Come on! Aaron, look! Okay, go! Come on, Josh, come on!
That's the sound of the pavé.
Fucking state of it. I mean, they're travelling at 60k an hour down here.
We're just in a family estate car. Whoa. We're in a family estate car with a bunch of stickers on and a load of bikes on the roof. Going along Napoleonic. Cobblestones. As fast as we can.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
We just come to a halt now at the exit.
Oh, we just stopped.
Yeah, there was a rider trying to get a wheel change in front of him. So we've been delayed there by about 20 seconds, which means we're going to have to go very fast now. At least we're off the cobbles. That was absolutely mental. Oh my god, flying through that village. Can you imagine living there and seeing that come through your head?
None of it makes any sense.
Anyway, we're back.
How is this a sport?
Go, let's go. Come on, quick! Go! Bottle! What? Yeah, take it, go. Bottle, quick. It's okay, all good. Straight through, come on. Right, go the other side, Stop!
Right, we just have to fuck being off, unfortunately. Chaos, absolute chaos. Love it, though. That was all go, wasn't it?
Joe Pidcock, take check.
Fucking hell. There's fucking group of like 10. Let's go.
Pedals off it.
Pedals off it.
Yeah.
Joe! Joe! Move over! Fine!
Jacob. I can't judge it. If you think it's fine for feed bags when they come out the corner and they've got enough time to take them on, but if it's directly straight onto cobbles, then just do bottles because they don't want to have feed bags flapping around when they get the cobble sector.
Yeah, I agree.
Alright.
Yeah. Can't stop.
The absolute zenith of chaos came when Pete accidentally clipped a roadside sign that none of us had seen coming, and a bike flew off, and two others on the roof were trashed.
Aaron! Have we lost a bike?
What?
We lost a bike?
Yes.
We'll have to get someone to go and get it.
And it's Bob's bike?
Yeah, and Callum's was right as well.
How did I hit that?
I need to take this one off, Pete.
Okay, can we just get up to the group just to...
It mightn't fucking hang on.
Just have a look. It won't hang on?
No.
You sure?
Yeah, go on, try it. Go.
I'm alright?
Yeah, go.
Oh, I'm not going to forgive myself. No one would really find out about this, Ned, to be honest.
Yeah, no one listens to our podcast. But it's all going to work out, right?
I tell you what, if it does, you can keep it in. If it doesn't, we can...
All right, we'll see. This may or may not be in the podcast. We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, 25 kilometres to go or something like that. We've still got the Carrefour de Labra to come. We're on right about sector 6, I think. And... Pete's still got two riders at the front of the race, which is all right. We're in a 15-rider group.
Honestly, can't ask for much more than that. Joe had a mechanical, which brought him out the race. He was also in the front. And right now, I'm just really, really proud of how everyone's raced. Couldn't have asked for any more from any of them. So, fingers crossed now that there's no mishaps, mechanicals, crashes.
Puncture for 81.
Whoa!
Oh! Whoa! All right, 12k to go now, and we've just got wind. We think what's happened is there's three riders at the front with a 30-second gap. One of whom is Bob Donaldson. He's with Tom Tootenberg, and who's the Lotto fella?
Not sure.
Guy from Lotto Destiny.
It is Liam Van Blin.
So that, if that's right, then that's pretty phenomenal. Right, about 10k to go. 30 seconds. That should be a race-winning move for those three.
We're not here to make up the numbers.
Certainly not. Right, we're hurtling down the long straight approach to the velodrome. We're within 2 kilometres of the finish. We just heard that they've just gone through the Flamme Rouge. We're just at the Flamme Rouge now. We're not going to see them, but we're going to have to wait for race radio to see what happens. We're on the final little cobbled sector that leads into the velodrome now, and the waiting starts. They're on the velodrome now. We got no idea who's won it. It's finished. We got no idea who's won it. Bidon? Gourde? Des bidons? Ah non. Désolé.
C'est dommage.
Désolé. Non.
Second.
Yeah. Seconds. Come on.
Second's good.
Second's good.
Second is great.
Who won it?
I have no idea.
Second
place. Fantastic.
It's not bad, is it?
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not first, but it's definitely not bad. Whew.
Second, Pete.
Gotta be happy with that. I mean, I'm not disappointed, I'm gutted. But.
Second.
We were there, we were in the race. We did absolutely everything we could. The boys rode out of their skin, and then it just comes down to just pure bike racing, isn't it? Bob, I feel good for Bob because he was so close, and I know he'll be devastated not to win. But when you're that close, you always are. When you think about what you've been through to put yourself in that position over the whole day, and then you're that close, and you'll go through everything in your head, every sector, every move you made. But he's got to be proud of himself.
Johan, he's effort.
Well, we're still waiting for Bob to appear. All the other riders have come in, swapping war stories of, well, most of them missing their skin from their hands. Bikes coming in absolute bits. Almost every single one is punctured. Callum's finished on a punctured front wheel. Was it Callum who punctured in the last on the last sector as well?
It must be. Yeah. It's Callum's bike. He doesn't even know it.
Just bits and pieces. But we're waiting for Bob to come back from the podium. And in the meantime, we're just keeping an eye on the elite race and 46.7 kilometres to go. And
taking every corner with all this.
Mathieu van der Poel is 1.5 minutes up, and it looked at it, and honestly, in the time I've been recording this, he's actually just added 15 seconds to his gap. So he's unless something untoward happens, Mathieu van der Poel is riding towards victory, back-to-back victories in the in Paris-Roubaix. Well, that was that, Pete. How much more?
I just had a flashback to our first podcast.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. Well, I know what you mean.
We were in the woods.
In Brussels,
yeah. Anyway, it's back to the race.
With Rendell.
Yeah.
Do you remember Matt's trick of holding the microphone away from like the whoever was talking? It used to drive me mad. I'd be like manoeuvring his arm.
They were good days, weren't they?
Happy days. Simpler times.
Simpler times, yeah.
How much more intense was that than I knew it was going to be intense, but actually experienced? Because it's worth stating, I haven't stated it yet in this podcast. You'd never done that before. You never raced this race.
No.
You obviously never DS'd it, because Trinity haven't DS'd it, and it is completely unlike everything else, isn't it?
Just can't even put it into words. just relentless, really relentless. There was not one, but there was a brief period once the race had sort of happened with 30k to go where we could finally relax a little bit. But then we were always on the ball of, when are we going to be allowed up to the next group? And it was always hovering around the 1 minute mark, wasn't it? So we were still concentrated. But I mean, I can barely remember not being on cobbles.
Yeah.
I felt like we were just on cobbles all the time.
Which isn't the case, but it just
which isn't
how it
the
feels.
Case. Yeah, there's a lot of tarmac in that race, but
you're either on cobbles or you're screaming through villages at 70 miles an hour, taking right-hand turns, squealing tyres. It's just insane.
I'd be intrigued to know what it's like DSing the World Tour, the Pro Race.
Maybe
the
more
difference.
Maybe more controlled. I don't know.
Maybe not.
Well, they've got two cars for a start, so you're not trying to cover everything.
Oh, and also you've got. Although we don't have radios, you've got two directors in the car. Yeah. So, but I mean, what a day!
What a day!
I am exhausted now, but it was a great experience. Definitely one for the book.
There's Bob. Oh, he's come back from the podium. Congratulate him.
Bob.
Cheers.
Bring it in.
Yes.
Cheers for the help.
Big one.
How do you feel about that?
It was good, yeah. Pretty happy.
Whole team's absolutely nailed it, didn't they?
Oh, mate.
Will at the start, unreal.
Yeah.
And then Callum, the end, like, he just covered everything, and then I just did what I
can. Talk about everyone just stepping up.
Literally.
To the occasion. Like, you know, when you look back to Olympia Store,
yeah,
it was just like completely. I mean, wow.
Levels above.
Yeah,
like, the team was just the whole team. Like even the staff, it made a big difference. I think.
Yeah, and everyone just bought in, didn't they?
Exactly.
Just fully committed. So
I'm glad I could almost get it.
How
first,
feel about you?
First loser, man. It's gutting, but
it's because I was saying to Ned when you put so much into. Getting there, so much has come before you arriving on the velodrome, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That you're like, you know, could you do all that all again to get in that same place, and then you come second, if that makes sense. But then, what a ride! So it's
I needed something like that.
Barca trip,
you deserve it. We were close to Barca.
We were close.
Birthday tomorrow, isn't it? So
it's your birthday.
Yeah. Tomorrow, is it?
Yeah.
It's nice celebrations. Then you
can relax.
Airport view, so.
Well, there we go. I'm gonna leave the Trinity lot to their night out in their rather average French hotel in the north of France. The Barcelona trip that was just alluded to was going to be, if they won the race, they were all going to jump on a plane and go to Barcelona and party until the wee small hours. And well, it's a silver medal, so that means that they'll be getting the beers in an average hotel in the north of France. But what a day. In fact, what a weekend. The women's race and then the under-23s race. And do you know what? either Mathieu van der Poel won or he didn't win. But for me, the podcast, the weekend, everything ends here. Well, I tell a lie. I had to stay, didn't I? I'm here after all to watch the to watch Mathieu van der Poel come in and win Paris-Roubaix for a second year in a row. He's got a 2:40 lead. I'm stood here next to some French cycling fans. On attend Mathieu van der Poel. Hein?
Tout à fait.
Tout à fait.
We are waiting for him.
comme l'année dernière et l'année prochaine aussi.
Peut-être, peut-être.
Ouais, c'est un cours incroyable.
Incroyable, et puis ouais. Enfin, partir d'aussi loin, c'est quand même impressionnant. Ouais. Ouais. Impressionnant.
Après avoir gagné le Tour de Flandre la semaine prochaine, dernière.
Yeah.
Ouais, tout à fait, tout à fait. Ça fait longtemps qu'il y a un vainqueur français
longtemps.
Du Tour de France, du Paris-Roubaix.
Tour de France, Paris-Roubaix, Paris-Roubaix, c'est Duclos Lassalle.
Oui.
Je crois que ça fait...
Ça fait longtemps. Hein.
25 ans, 30 ans. Ouf. 30 ans peut-être. Ouais.
Vous avez raison, je crois.
Ouais. Malheureusement, j'ai raison.
La crise éternelle du cyclisme français. Enjoy. So I'm standing here on just at the entrance to the final section of Pavé, which isn't really a section of Pavé, just outside the Flamme-Rouge, and I'm going to watch Van der Poel come past here. And off Mathieu went to win the race. Holy Week bookended by two glimpses of a rainbow. I have been to Paris-Roubaix many times before, and I hope I'll be back for many years to come. But I doubt it will ever feel like that, ever again. What a wonderful sport this is.